This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague and friend Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. And we're to Taipei, Taiwan, our colleague Anne Stevenson Yang, to comment on a Bloomberg report in these last hours about China's economy and the troubles ahead. China's economic activity cooled more than expected at the start of the fourth quarter, writes Bloomberg, with an unprecedented slump in investment and slower growth in industrial output, adding to a drag from sluggish consumptions. Gordon, a very good day to you. In that single paragraph, Bloomberg seems to have moved over to the well-it's-not-going-well side of the equation. I believe last week or the week before, there was a number that was also surprising about exports, given that that's the only engine China has ever developed, the export model. This suggests that the slump is an inadequate metaphor. We're talking about a crash here. We've been observing various failed metrics for some time. Are we too far ahead? Should we back up and wait for Bloomberg? What is Bloomberg acknowledging that they haven't before? Good evening to you, Gordon.
Good evening, John. And I think we're seeing long-term decline of the Chinese economy. And worse, we're seeing a Chinese political system that cannot come up with the obvious solutions. The number on exports, I think, is telling. In October, China's exports slumped 1.1% year on year. But exports to the U.S. fell 25%. And that's significant because China's been trying to make up for that slump to the U.S. By exporting more elsewhere. Those exports elsewhere have thinner margins than the sales to the U.S. And so factories in China are hurting. But we're seeing this across the board as numbers come in showing that the Chinese economy is indeed failing.
We welcome our colleague Anne Stevenson Yang. She is in Taipei, Taiwan. And she is also the author of an important book because it's the sweep of what we're seeing from the beginning of the miracle to the end of the miracle. It's entitled Wild Ride. Anne was present in the late 20th century when China converted to capitalism with Chinese characteristics. And a very good day to you. This present observation by Bloomberg, unprecedented slump. When you first had conversations with China back in the 20th century, the Chinese who were bursting with energy and opportunity, did they imagine that there would ever be a day like this, that the dream would come crumbling all around them? Was that hesitation anywhere in the conversation? Good day to you, Anne.
Hi, John. So I think that nobody ever thinks that far ahead. What people did feel in the 1990s and the early 2000s was a lot of excitement about the growth and the opportunity in China. And of course, when China entered the WTO in 2001, there was a big growth spurt based on exports. Clearly, that was going to go away, and that's going away now. It surprises me a little to see the export slump because I thought that Chinese exporters would compensate by dropping the price. Compensate for tariffs. And it seems that even though prices are dropping, still the volume of exports is also dropping.
So the imagination wasn't 30 years out. Was it? Capitalism has ups and downs. As we say of the market, it goes up and down. Did that talk sit upon them when they started out in the early days?
Well, I mean, you have to distinguish between policymakers or the government and the Chinese people. So I think that for the government, you came up upon a sort of fork in the road along about 2008, where you had to decide, are we going to continue with these reforms and loosen our own grip over the country, our own control, or are we going to pull back the reforms? And clearly they chose the latter. As for the regular people, it depends on where you sit. I do think that Chinese history tends to be a story of hopes raised and dashed. So I think there was some of that going on for the Chinese people.
Gordon, you have a question for Anne.
Anne, last month, the Central Committee of the Communist Party held its fourth plenum. They revealed their 15th five-year plan, which starts next year. Did you see anything that the party is implementing or will implement that will solve China's fundamental economic problems?
Absolutely not. And it's a bit, that also is a bit surprising because they've always been in the past so concerned about keeping up appearances that they were pushing money into the economy and forcing investment. And this time they're kind of not doing that. And they're not coming up with a bailout program for a lot of localities that are really hurting. So I really think that there's nothing positive coming in the next 5-year plan.
Does the fact of the slump, does that continue to surprise investors in the West, or is it all built into the number now? No one's even looking at a turnaround.
I think that the idea that China was rising and overtaking the U.S. has been put to bed, and very few people think of that anymore. I think that there are a lot of asset investors in the U.S. and in Europe that are just searching for yield, and so they sometimes hold out hope that Asia is going to provide them with that yield, and China specifically. I don't think it's a majority.
Gordon, there's a part of our economy that is not apparent in China. That's the consumer part. And now and again, the Central Committee says consumerism will help us. Is that accurate, Gordon?
I don't think it's going to be accurate. And the reason is that consumption contribution to the Chinese GDP is somewhere about 38% right now. That's among the lowest contribution rates in the world. And when you look at what the fourth plenum has decided, it looks like it's going to go even lower because Xi Jinping is putting so much more into technological development, into factory production. And that by definition means that consumption share will shrink.
And the apartment buying that went on so feverishly these last 20 years, well, not the last few, but since the turn of the century, the country, the people and the entities who bought those apartments, have they abandoned them and given them up? Or are they still thinking the future is coming our way?
I think that what they're doing right now is holding on to them because they don't really have a choice. And they can see the slow decline in property prices, which is managed by the party. The problem is if you don't let the market wash out the imbalances, then the stagnation goes on for decades. And for this, all we need to do is look at what happened to Japan after the bursting of the bubble in 1989.
Right. You got your money back. You just had to wait 30 years. And those apartments that are not being occupied, are they having the rain and wind blow through them? And so therefore they're ruins. Do we know?
There is a lot of that, John. There's maintenance fees that people pay in order to maintain the units, but a lot of the maintenance crews have gone away. And you know, there were a lot of local governments that in building these apartment buildings came up with a plan where the developer would have to pay a crew to maintain them for 2 years. So the 2 years would be up with an awful lot of those units.
Gordon, you have a question for Anne.
And with the property market right now, where do you see it going?
There just isn't any place for it to go, Gordon. The capital investment in property is dropping. Prices continue to decline. We don't really have a lot of transparency on pricing, but even on the public statistics, the pricing is going down. One interesting statistic is that sales of construction equipment are way, way down. So just nobody is, and land sales are down. Nobody is interested in building anymore, and the prices of units are coming down. So the Chinese people have a tremendous portion of their savings in property, but they can't sell it right now. So they're just going to be sitting on it while it decays.
I follow a report in Bloomberg. Raymond Young, chief economist for Greater China at Australia and New Zealand Banking Group, he acknowledges growth momentum is clearly dissipated. However, he goes on to say this: government efforts to tackle overcapacity and excessive competition have, quote, impacted the investment pipeline. Okay, taking out the jargon, he's not mentioning tariffs, Gordon. In other words, what we're watching in China has very little to do with so-called Liberation Day and the excessive or the said to be excessive fees that tariffs represent. In other words, China created this problem and it's making it worse with overcapacity. Is that accurate? That's his measure.
Yeah, that is accurate, because if you don't try to stimulate consumption, the really only other thing you can do if you're a Chinese technocrat is to stimulate exports. Right now, it's not only the United States with tariffs. other countries are putting on restrictions on Chinese imports, including Brazil, a good friend of China, which this year slapped pretty high tariffs on EVs and plug-in hybrids. So this is going to be a long-term problem for China as countries restrict their markets to the Chinese.
The metaphor I like from Wall Street, somebody took the punch bowl away. In China's case, the punch bowl might be broken. Ann Stephenson Yang, author of Wild Ride, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.